Welcome back to Canucks Talk Trade Deadline Edition here, Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Trade Desk is brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress, the Lower Mainland's favorite furniture and mattress destination. Visit Jags showrooms in Langley, Abbotsford, and soon to open in Coquitlam, or online at jagsfurniture.ca. And just minutes before the official NHL trade deadline, a bombshell not related to the Canucks, but per Bob McKenzie, and now being reported elsewhere, Vegas will be acquiring Tomáš Hertl from the San Jose Sharks. A massive, massive, out of nowhere acquisition. Did you say this was official now, Dom?
Pending the trade call.
So
Luke Fox is saying Vegas adds Hertl, Hanifin. Oh, never mind. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
A summary.
Yeah. First reported by Bob McKenzie.
So I got excited.
Now out there, as you said, official pending the trade call. So Tomáš Hertl, currently on IR, signed through the 2029-2030 season at 8.13. will be going to Vegas. I am fascinated to see what this deal looks like.
Yeah, Friedman has it as pending team call. So, and noon has passed.
Noon has passed. So, as mentioned, you know, it does not mean that we can't get word of further deals at this point. We will see if anything develops for the Vancouver Canucks.
Colin Miller to the Jets.
Colin Miller going from New Jersey to the Jets. So one of those kind of bottom of the lineup, puck moving types off the board going to the Winnipeg Jets as they continue to be very active today. But the headline right now at the moment is Tomáš Hertl going
Tomáš
to the Vegas
Hertl.
Golden Knights. Like,
my God.
Had anyone talked about that as a possibility?
No.
As him being on the move? He has a full no move.
It makes
tons of term, tons of salary.
It makes sense that the Sharks would be eager to clear the books off of anything they have.
Mm-hmm.
And to Hertl's credit, he's been pretty good amidst the tire fire that is the... Okay, wait, I've got breaking news.
Okay.
The Canucks are done for the day. They did not make any moves, and that includes not signing Phil Kessel. That's per me, and that's accurate.
So no Phil Kessel.
No Phil Kessel. Canucks are done for the day.
All right. So that's okay. With that note, as I said, we have a wrap on the Canucks information. Let's get into the whiteboard here.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into the Canucks. What's up with the Canucks? Trade deadline edition for today, March 8th. Starting with the headlines. And the headline is... no trades on deadline day, no acquisitions since the Elias Lindholm deal for the Vancouver Canucks. And I got to say, and I'm not saying this, like, we'll have time to break down what it means, look at the prices out there, were there moves they left on the board. So I'm not even saying this in a critical sense. But if you told me a week ago that there would have been literally zero moves, no Phil Kessel, no 13th forward, no 7th defenseman, I would not have believed it. I am very, very surprised that the deadline has come and passed without any moves, additional moves from the Vancouver Canucks.
And you said Murph would get the tweet.
You were
that is so petty.
Trans was like, that is
so petty.
Trans in the break, Trans was like, I'll have it. It's mine.
You know what? Sometimes you need that competitive edge, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you're
congratulations,
buddy. You're starting the headline segment. I'm like, about me?
It was perfect.
Press conference
was perfect to lead into the whiteboard.
The press conference is at 12:30.
12:30. Well, then I should go.
You should probably go.
All right, well, let's quick summary. Canucks, done for the day, having not made a move in the final week, really. But, I mean, really since the Lindholm trade.
Yeah.
Canucks jumped the market. And in so doing, they then decided to stand pat, although they were obviously involved in some wild, wild rumors over the course of this week, including the idea of them flipping Elias Lindholm. A particular report that A, made life pretty awkward for the player, but B, was just like stunning. And yet, because of how aggressive this management group has been, you know, you can't put it by them, right? And I think that's partly it. The Canucks have been, as you like to say, the main character in the NHL this season. And ultimately, all of a sudden, on the biggest hockey news day of the year, the Canucks were finally sidelined. And yet, I think when you look at it holistically, when you look at what this team has accomplished, when you look at how it looked last night in Vegas, you can understand why, having paid a first and a second for Hronek, right? Having paid a second to get off Pearson and bring in DeSmith, having bought Lafferty for a fifth, having paid a third for Zadorov, having brought in four free agents the way that they did, all on value deals, all of whom are overperforming, and finally having gotten Pettersson done when they did, this team ultimately decided, hey, like, at some point, we need to be mindful, too, of the medium term. I'm pretty confident that two main factors drove this, in my understanding. One is the fact that they were so easily outmuscled on Guentzel, because other than the prospects that they really can't afford to deal, your Volander, Lekaramäki tier.
The drop-off is steep after that.
They might like their other guys, but their other guys didn't carry enough value, right? Like, there was a feeling among the Canucks that they'd, you know, made credible offers for Guentzel. They weren't close, and they knew it. They knew it in the final 72 hours before the deal went through. They felt at points that they'd made better offers for Chris Tanev. But the old draft picks are cash, prospects are gift cards, right? Your $50 Starbucks gift card isn't worthwhile to someone who just wants to eat drink at Dunkin'. Connor Garland has no interest in your Starbucks gift card. So, you know, I think that's where the Canucks found themselves. And given that, I think they were reluctant to pay some of the prices, you know, that came up here. And here's the other thing. Don't ignore Baines, Podkolzin, those auditions leading up to the deadline. I think convinced the Canucks that they didn't need to pay for depth, that they actually kind of have it internally. And, you know, I also think made them more reluctant to part with guys that they think they're going to need next season and for many years beyond that. So I think those two factors ultimately played at least a partial role in the Canucks deciding that they've built the team that they've built, that they pushed a lot of chips into the center of the table to get there, and that they were content with what they had.
All right, you get to Rogers Arena. Great stuff. Way to get the tweet out before Murph. Well done. Go cover the press conference at 12:30. I'll handle the whiteboard here. Bic will jump on with me to wrap things up as well.
Thanks for hanging out with us on deadline day, everybody.
It was great.
You know what?
I still had a great time.
Some deadlines, like last night, I go to sleep and I feel like I've been studying for an exam. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, and it's like, today's the big day that I've got to be on point. And then you get in and it's like, I got Jacob Zaboral takes. And that was one today. Today it was like, You arrive for your final exam and it's like, draw a smiley face stick figure. And it's like,
I can do that. No problem.
Nailed it. So glad I read Civilization and its Discontents for this. Happy face. Bye.
All right. Bye. That is Thomas Drantz signing off. He's going to hustle down to Rogers Arena. Patrick Alvin will have a press conference at 12:30, which actually Bic probably won't have to join me because we'll do that. We'll carry that live on the air, of course, here on Sportsnet 650. So maybe we can get Bic in for 10 minutes here after I wrap up the whiteboard or something like that. But Patrick Alvin will address the media at 12:30. And of course, the headline today, nothing for the Canucks. No depth moves, no Phil Kessel, nothing. The roster remains the same as it entered the day with. Again, leaving aside any value judgment, do you like it? Do you not like it? That is a major, major surprise to me, considering how aggressive this management group likes to be. And just to build on what Drancer was saying there, I think a lot of this has to come back to the Elias Pettersson contract, right? Getting that cost certainty, all of a sudden, it inevitably changes how you're looking at this team and changing how you're looking at the years to come. And Drantz was just mentioning, you know, Baines and Podkolzin, and hey, we really like these guys. One, does that mean we don't really need to add a ton of depth because we like the depth that we have in-house? But two, does it also mean, you know, if we're not trying to just be competitive this year and have a chance at winning the Stanley Cup this year, but also next year and the year after that, could Baines and Podkolzin be really key pieces of that? How long is it before Lekaramäki or Volander or Elias Pettersson could figure into that? So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Not only do you, can a guy like Podkolzin or Baines potentially help you this year, but they have value down the road, and that makes you less likely to part with those types of assets when you're trying, when now that you have Pettersson in the fold and you know you've got this Pettersson, Hughes, Miller core throw Demko in there for the next two seasons as well. That is your window. That's what you're building around. And I think that explains the reluctance to part with more picks. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one comes in. Just makes no sense. Phil is a no-risk signing. I'm going to be really interested to hear what Patrick Alvin has to say about Phil Kessel, because it does seem like, why not? And look, when the Phil Kessel news first was out there, I kind of said, I don't really see the fit. I don't know how much he's going to move the needle. So I don't think it's a massive loss for the Canucks not to sign Phil Kessel. But it's certainly a surprise, given everything we'd heard since he arrived in Abbotsford. And the fact that he's been in Abbotsford for, what, a month now? If not a month, pretty darn close, was that, hey, the intention is to sign him, right? Unless something goes weird, they're going to sign him. That was the reporting. And ultimately, it does not turn out that way. So, the headline, the big headline, Canucks do nothing. Text in 650-650 with your responses to that. Other headlines around the league. The Vegas Golden Knights acquiring Tomáš Hertl. I'm flying solo here, so I'm trying to keep up with return, retention, all of those things. Don't have the details. Dom Shermati. Details on the Tomáš Hertl.
No, like when they come in.
Oh, don't say I got you in my ear then if you don't currently have the details.
Just focus on the show. I'll help you out.
All right. Well, when you have the details, let me know. But Tomáš Hertl going to the Vegas Golden Knights. Bombshell just minutes before the deadline dropped by Bob McKenzie, made official since then. So Vegas, look, they didn't look very good last night. We'll see what Tomáš Hertl can do, but that is a fascinating acquisition for the Vegas Golden Knights. Other news of note from today around the NHL, of course, Winnipeg getting Tyler Toffoli for, I believe, a second and a third. So I love that fit. And I know that was a top target in a lot of Canucks fans' mind for the team. Obviously, former Canuck, still a really, really good player. As Drance pointed out, you know, they're already short on second-round picks. They're already short on third-round picks. If you do that deal, all of a sudden your draft prospects for the next few years are very, very thin. So, yeah, I would have loved the fit as well. It just ended up, I think, being too pricey for the Canucks to do. But Winnipeg ends up getting Tyler Toffoli. Jason Zucker, another potential Canucks target, goes to Nashville for a six-round pick. The headline there is that Arizona didn't want to retain money. And we saw this again in the Matt Dumba deal. They were willing to just shed salary and take a very minimal return in exchange for doing that. That's what they did with Nashville. Again, the Canucks could not offer that. They would have needed not just retention, but double retention to get Jason Zucker, and that wasn't something that Arizona was going to be interested in. And of course, yesterday, Jake Guentzel, another potential Canucks target, ends up going to the Carolina Hurricanes. Some of the guys who stayed put, Jordan Greenway, Pavel Buchnevich, Frank Vetrano, Riley Smith. Didn't see a lot of players with term get moved at this. I know Tomáš Hertl did, but a lot of rentals and not really necessarily premium prices paid for those players on deadline day, those rental players. By the way, interesting note here. If you're a Canucks fan and you're a little upset that your team didn't do more on deadline day, how about this from Sportsnet Stats? Only two Canadian franchises made a trade today, the Habs and the Jets. Now, I really like the Jets' work. Dom?
Elliot Freeman reporting, David Edstrom is a key part of the trade to San Jose from Vegas.
All right. David Edstrom, part of the trade going back to San Jose.
Key part.
Yeah, sorry. I don't want to disrespect David Edstrom. 32nd overall pick in the most recent draft, center out of Sweden, 6'2".
We have more details. This is from Dreger. A first and 25, David Edstrom, Tomáš Hertl, a third and 25, and a third and 27.
So, okay, a first in 2025, two-thirds?
Two-thirds, Hertl, Edstrom.
All right.
It's listed, that's how he lists it on X, Twitter.
All right, so we'll try to make sense of that one. Going forward, because it's a little jumbled how it's been all thrown together there. But we'll try to get the full details of the Tomáš Hertl to Vegas trade when we have a second. And as I was saying, only two Canadian teams made a deal today, the Habs and the Jets. Last time that happened, 1989. Last time only two Canadian teams made a deal on deadline day. That's per Sportsnet Stats. Dom?
Friedman adding some clarity. It's a first in 2025, two-thirds, and Hurdle at 17% retained.
Right. So that's confusing, though, because that makes it sound like those are all going in one way. You know
right?
what I mean?
Yeah.
So
come on, insiders.
We'll stay on
together.
That. We'll stay on that because it's very confusingly reported in that format. So not a lot of activity from the Canadian teams
got
in general.
Even more
all right,
clarity.
Third tries the charm. Here,
Danny Webster now making sense of it. It's a 2023 first round pick. David Edstrom is the only player going back to San Jose. Golden Knights sending a 2025 first.
Okay.
2025 third and 2027 third.
Okay. So
sending that first means Calgary gets the 2026 first in the Hanifin deal.
So they did end up using that first round pick. That they had the condition on to Calgary. That ends up going to San Jose, their most recent first-round pick, and two-thirds. And by the way, they'll be getting Hurdle at $6.75 million. That's 17% retention from San Jose. That's a big deal because Hurdle is signed through 2030, into the next decade. So that money will stay on San Jose's books for the next decade as they end up shipping Tomas Hertl to the Vegas Golden Knights. Fascinating deal from one of the Canucks' Pacific Division rivals. I'll just update as well here. We'll do kind of an abbreviated version of the whiteboard because obviously the big headline is the Canucks standing pat at the deadline, not making any significant moves, not making any moves, in fact, not signing Phil Kessel. They're going to roll with what they have. You can get your reaction in 650-650. But just to kind of keep the spirit of the whiteboard alive here, we'll do a quick update on their daily playoff chances. That was a great night for the Canucks last night in terms of their division chances per Dom Lucision's model. Remember, it had tilted all the way down to a 58% chance after the Oilers made the Adam Henrique acquisition. But with the Oilers losing to Columbus last night, the Canucks winning to Vegas, Dom now projects the Canucks to have a 72% chance to win their division. And by the way, Vegas's playoff odds all the way down to 84%. Still really good, but you're seeing some slippage there, and they could be in trouble if the Hurdle and other acquisitions don't really move the needle for them. Dom.
Frank Cervelli also reporting that the Bruins had a deal on the table to move Linus Ullmark to the LA Kings, but it did not cross the finish line.
So there you go. LA not able to add to their goaltending. LA didn't really do anything of note at this deadline. So that's another interesting Canucks relevant point here, that potential playoff opponent, divisional rival, not active. And I will say, you know, obviously Vegas, very, very active, but even Edmonton, I like Adam Henrique just fine, but that's not really an earth-shattering move. So on deadline day, and really deadline week, with the exception of Vegas, the other Pacific Division playoff teams, not particularly active. All right, Dom.
Friedge is saying that Hurdle is expected to return in the regular season.
Yeah, that makes sense. So they'll get him back at some point.
Just in case people were wondering about LTI.
But again, look, Vegas, this is not a short-term move for Vegas, right? Yes, they want him to give them a boost this year, just like they want Noah Hanifin to really help them this year and not, you know, help them get into the playoffs and help them do damage once they're there. But that's also a long, long-term commitment for Tomas Hertl from the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Hanifin extension, not official, just reported by Kevin Weeks yesterday, but I expect that to be a long-term commitment from the Golden Knights as well. All right, we'll call that the whiteboard for today. I got a few minutes here before it's time to sign off. We'll get you to Rogers Arena live for Patrick Alvin's press conference. It's going to be really interesting to hear what he has to say about the lack of activity from the Canucks on trade deadline day here. That's coming up at 12:30. Before then, we've got a chance to dive into the inbox, read some texts here. This one from Saskatchewan Joe. Hi, Jamie. I don't mind the Canucks being quiet this deadline, considering how much shopping they completed prior to the deadline, saying that the Tyler Toffoli deal was a steal. Toffoli's probably the one that I think a lot of people will be looking at and wondering, oh, man, that would have looked really, really interesting here. But again, even then, there were complications with the Canucks matching that deal, doing double retention, all of it. It was a much cleaner trade to make from a Winnipeg Jets perspective. This one comes in. Disappointing day when they get bullied come April. We will look back on this day. This is a fascinating aspect of this, right? Because we always talk about risk in terms of, oh, man, they gave up a first-round pick. oh, that could really come back to bite them. I mean, we're already hearing it in the Elias Lindholm deal, right? Like, uh-oh, what if Hunter Brustevich pops? Who's Calgary going to take with that first-round pick? But it's fair to say there's risk not doing anything, right? It's a declaration of confidence in your ability to get things done. And I think that's a totally fair bet for Canucks management to make, right? To look at it and say, look, it's not just about this year. We've got Elias Pettersson in the fold now. We like our core. We like some of our young players. We got to keep our powder dry. That's a fair bet to make, but make me no mistake, it is a bet. There is still risk attached to it. If things don't go their way in the playoffs, there will be a lot of second guessing and looking back at this moment. Producer Dom.
A trade to announce. It's believed that Connor Dewar has been traded to the Leafs from the Minnesota Wild.
All right, so the Leafs do something. Connor Dewar. I'm sure that'll really satisfy all the Leafs fans in Toronto, but throw out my Canadian team stat from Sportsnet. Three Canadian teams now have made a deal. All right, joining me for just a few minutes here before we get you down to Rogers Arena, the host of the People Show, Vic Nizar. What's up, buddy?
You guys have made an acquisition?
Yes. The biggest acquisition of the day.
Call up or is it a trade?
I don't know. Are we giving any? I don't think we're giving anything to the People Show. Maybe future considerations.
I was a waiver claim.
I owe you a favor. That's basically what future considerations is.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. No
I,
moves.
I liked how, by the way, you're like plotting out the schedule. I was like, all right, 12:30, going to be there. And then like,
and it's slowly, like, oh, wait a second.
Slowly no moves are happening. I was like, they're going to do the press conference.
They're
going to
do this at 12:30, aren't they? Yeah. They threw our plans all out of whack. Yeah. But anyways, we squeezed you on here for a few minutes. So again, as I was saying, like, before we even get into, is it good? Is it bad? What do you like? What do you not like about it? Just, I'm very surprised. Not even to have like one deal. You know what I mean? Not
like
even to have
number seven D
six
man.
Round for a seventh defenseman. Again, I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like, wow, I did not foresee that in all of the different scenarios I was imagining in my head.
Surprising. Very surprising. That, again, even just the baseline, like, let's just go get another forward or another depth D-man.
Here's a guy who can kill penalties in a pinch for us, you know?
Now, it might be a ringing endorsement for some of the guys they had, because in theory, like, Noah Juulsen's kind of your seven. So, given the prices that you saw today, which weren't overwhelming, but is there someone that you feel emboldened by that's like, oh, this guy's definitely, like, we're prepared to pay to get something better than the one Noah Juulsen has provided?
Mm-hmm.
Who's, like, for me, is played at, like, a number six level.
Yeah, and Juulsen right now is set up to be your number seven. And that's not, I mean, Juulsen is the type of guy you would go trade to become your number seven.
Correct.
Right?
So is it worth paying? You know, they are short on draft picks, obviously, with the moves that they have made. So is it worth paying an extra one to go get that one? It's understandable. It's surprising. But I can see the logic behind it. The forward one for me is the weird one. That's the one that's like, for me, the whole thing to solve this new year was who's going to play with Elias Pettersson?
Mm.
Long term, short term, whatever we're talking about, who's going to play there? And Lindholm's a nice player, fine acquisition. We'll see what it looks like, but they didn't solve that for me. And that for me is like very incomplete.
But I think, how much of it do you think though is that they have him locked up now? So you can, it becomes easier to talk yourself into, we're going to wait and try to do that next year.
Or talk yourself out of. Not talk yourself into.
Yourself into doing it next year instead of now.
Sure.
Or talk yourself out of it.
Yeah. The whole point is to be aggressive and to make the team better. And Lindholm makes the team better. I get it. But they didn't solve the number one thing. And if that materializes, it's as if they reprioritize their strength. Do we go get another winger to go play with this guy who might score some goals?
Mm-hmm.
And we're more formidable in the top six? Or do you reprioritize our strength and say, let's just go three down the middle, and now we have Miller, Pettersson, and Lindholm? There's value in that too, absolutely. Some of the minute distribution at times can get clunky, and is there enough play-driving players to sustain having three centers like that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to wonder. But for me, it's like the biggest thing they needed to solve, they didn't. Regardless of if he signed long-term
or not. The Toffoli one, as I was saying, like, man, that's not that much. He's such a good player. He would have been a great fit. But having said that, I can also see from the team's perspective why even the relatively moderate price, and you throw, let's say, another fifth round pick on top of that to get another team
I mean, a fifth round
to
pick.
Retain.
Yeah, how much does that move in the
No. But yeah. I mean, for like to get another team to do a
sure,
additional
yeah,
retention,
yeah.
right?
But do they even have the picks?
That's the thing. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, they don't
They've
have the...
already spent
yeah.
those picks building this team. And I do think you have to keep that in mind. Like, They made the Hronik trade. That sent out a second round pick. I believe it was a third, sending out Tanner Pearson and getting DeSmith back. A fifth for Sam Lafferty. Picks for Nikita Zadorov, right? Like, they've all, in some ways, and how often have we talked about the Canucks being by far the most active team in terms of trading around the NHL? This feels a little bit like the rest of the league just catching up. Like, you can't be active without giving up assets. And so, in retrospect, maybe we shouldn't have been that surprised that it's like, actually, they don't have that many assets left to trade here. Well, they've already done it all.
Draft picks are a replenishing currency. They just aren't replenished when you want them.
No, no. You can't just press the button and be like, can we get ours early?
It's just like, yeah. You're probably
you gotta wait.
You're probably not going to trade 2029 picks right now. Who knows what it's going to look like? So you say, you know, there's a prudent way to do this, but right now it isn't. But yeah, it's, look, a lot of their work was done early. Obviously, going back to Zadorov, even
going back to Lafferty, like, really,
yeah.
Like, when we're talking about, yeah, hey, did they add a bottom six guy? It's like they did, Sam Lafferty at the beginning of the season. Okay, Bick, you're gonna take over at one. Randeep will be with you. All right, so people show Bick and Randeep from 1 to 3. We'll take a break here. Thanks for sticking with us. I know the Canucks didn't do anything, but I had a blast as well. Patrick Alvin, you'll want to hear what he has to say about the lack of moves from the Vancouver Canucks. That's next here on Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Bick Nizar. Trance down at Rogers Arena. We anticipate the Canucks press conference with GM Patrick Alvin starting momentarily here. So we'll take you live to Rogers Arena whenever that does happen. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Trade deadline day coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at ajs.pizza. I've had a few slices now. Simply fantastic, as always. The Trade Desk, brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress, the Lower Mainland's favorite furniture and mattress destination. Visit Jags showrooms in Langley, Abbotsford, and soon to open Coquitlam, or online at jagsfurniture.ca. So Patrick Alvin set to speak here momentarily. And I got to say, Bick, the thing I'm probably most curious to hear about is Phil Kessel, which I've always kind of maintained, like, if you're counting on Phil Kessel to make a big difference for you, you're probably going to be disappointed, right? But I also didn't have a problem with doing it as kind of a last resort depth addition. The fact that...
I love how that's the thing you're most interested in.
No, like, well, hey, it's just curious.
Potential 15th forward didn't get signed.
What's the explanation, though? You know what I mean? It's just kind of odd. I could see him not signing if they did a bunch of other things, right, that prevented it from signing. And again, this is not like a judgment call. Like, I don't think the absence of Phil Kessel is going to swing their season. It's just like, I hope he enjoyed Abbotsford. It's like, thanks for hanging out, Phil.
3 weeks in Abbotsford, man.
He got 3 weeks in Abbey out of
this. Come on. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely nothing.
A lot of rounds at Castle Fun Park.
A lot of rounds at Castle Fun Park.
But yeah, no, you're right. It's just odd.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's odd. But here's the thing. Do you feel like anything was lost?
No, that's what I mean. It's not a big deal. It's just curious.
I'm fairly over it already. Like, the deadline went 32 minutes ago. It's like, yeah, it would have been cool.
All right.
But we really weren't sure. Like,
remember the Phil Kessel thing?
To what level it was. Oh, it's going to be a great chapter in a yearbook 1 year. It's like, oh, yeah, Phil Kessel
was here.
Great
footnote.
Yeah. Phil Kessel was in town for about three weeks.
Guys in Abbey got to skate with him. Got to meet a legend.
What an experience. Oh,
what an experience. Absolutely.
Three-time cup champion, man.
All right. Into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Don from Williams Lake says, seriously, are we surprised that the Canucks didn't do anything at the deadline? Rutherford has always done his big moves a tad before the trade deadline. Do you think the smaller pieces of the puzzle are already in our organization ready to step in where needed? So as to, you know, the timing of Rutherford's moves, it's true, of course, that he has the track record of doing his big moves well ahead of the deadline, which we saw this year as well. But that doesn't mean he never does anything at the deadline or on deadline day. And all the reporting we'd heard was they're in on Guentzel, right? If they're not in on Guentzel, Zucker, Toffoli, they really, really want to bring in scoring, right? We've heard them connected to Jordan Greenway. So, yeah, I think it is perfectly fair to be surprised. Now, I've been kind of talking through it, and once the surprise wears off, you can kind of dig in and you can see the reasoning about them having done a lot of their work already, the lack of picks, all of that stuff. But I think it's totally fair to be surprised, but they didn't do any moves. Like, yeah, Jim Rutherford does his big work early, but there's always stuff you can do around the edges. The point about, do you think the smaller pieces of the puzzle are already in our organization, ready to step in where needed? I mean, that's the bet they're making, right? Because there's going to be, like, even when Dakota Joshua and Tyler Myers are back in the lineup, right? Guys who end up on the outside looking in, they're going to be called upon at some point. Injuries are going to happen. Guys are going to have to step up. Whether it's Vasilipod Kolzin, whether it's Noah Juulsen, whether it's Arshdeep Bains, whatever the case is, those guys are going to be called upon. And I think this management group is saying, we're willing, we believe in our depth that we have a legitimate chance to win with the roster as it is currently constructed.
The one thing I was considering here in the last little stretch where maybe it was going to be challenging to try to get one of these higher-end pieces, Toffoli and Guentzel. But if you missed out on that market, the players, like a couple of players you just mentioned, very untested, obviously, and put Kolzin in and guys like that. But they do have some upside. Like, we're not talking about, like, oh, they have Sheldon Dries and, like, oh, it's another body.
Yep.
At least put Kolzin, it's like we're talking about a top 10 pick here. That if he gets thrust into a regular role, he's going to have to get pushed up the lineup. And suddenly, like, it's a pedigreed player that can go up into your lineup.
All right, we go now to Rogers Arena and Patrick Ovechkin.
Where does it go here today? Looking at our team and where we are, sitting here today with 89 points with the group we have here. The pickup we did during the year, Lafferty, Sidorov, and Lindholm. We felt that we strengthened our team and it played really well hockey. Just coming out of the last week here on the road trip, giving up three goals, back to playing to our staples, playing to our standards, getting Susie back, getting Dakota Joshua back here in 10 days, 2 weeks. We felt that the team we have is good enough to compete here. I also said several times that I'm very pleased with the younger players in Abbotsford. With the injuries we had, we've been able to give Baines some games. We've been able to give Colson games and Linus Karlsson. And those guys have shown that they're good potential good NHL players. Some of them are closer than others, but we felt really good.
I think Jim earlier in the year talked about the risks of making moves and the risks of not making moves and having to weigh everything. How much did that perspective come into the picture, especially with the assets you'd already given up in some of those previous trades?
Yeah, I think that's something we're always looking into. And for us, and I said it before, it's just not, I'm actually trying to work every day, not just for the last day here. And I think that's where we always trying to be ahead of things and even getting players in earlier so they have a chance to adjust. We felt when we, going back to before we started the season with Lafferty to get some more speed in, looking when we needed Sidorov, we were a little bit banged up there. And being an LTIR as well, we need to move in order to facilitate a trade for us. We need to move a player out to get a player in. So obviously that's a tougher situation than accruing cap space during the year. So
Patrick, you mentioned a couple of forwards that have come up from Abbotsford and got a chance to play, but in the playoffs, you're likely going to need some depth on defense. What are you seeing down in Abbotsford for some defensemen that might be able to step up in that role?
Yeah, I think it was a good step in the right direction here for Breespa. Very happy for him. He worked hard during the whole year, and for him to get medical cleared and be assigned to start playing down there. I think guys like Jet Wu, McCord, Philip Johansson, they all improve during the year. We have good depth when we're healthy up here, but we know a playoff is a different animal. You need depth, and those guys have showed that they're capable to play games.
And after all the trades you've made throughout the season, was today a little bit difficult to not make one for you?
Yeah, I guess you need another partner in order to make a deal. And as I said, we were in talking to teams that made their players available. But sometimes the fit is not there. As I said, I didn't want to risk. And I feel that the group we have here and the team we have here have played so well together, and they continue to find ways to win games and continue to improve. So credit to the players.
Patrick, two of the teams that made some of the biggest and boldest moves are chasing you in the Pacific Division, you know, Edmonton and Las Vegas. How much harder do you think the division is to win or get out of in the playoffs now than it was a week ago?
Oh, absolutely. Way harder. And we all know that those teams were good to coming in there too. I think the West have shown that there is several teams that are capable to competing for a cup this year. As we all said, every game is just going to get harder. That's the way it is. And I think it's a great learning experience for our young group here. We're looking at the roster. There is not a lot of playoff experience. So every big game here in March, you've seen the growth in the players going through adversity, coming into this tough week and being able to only give up 3 goals on the road. I think that says a lot about the players and the coaches, how they work.
So, and this is maybe a question that we'll ask Rick tomorrow, but when the teams chasing you have made those kind of moves, what is the message to your team to just believe in where you are? How do you kind of counter that mindset that, you know, they've made big changes and we're the same team that we were?
Yeah, but as I said, I'm trying to be ahead of things and trying to make the changes when it's needed and bringing in players earlier to adjust. We all know that it's going to take time for the adjustment, and some might not find the chemistry or not. That being said, we had tremendous respect for the other teams in our division. It's nothing has really changed. We know how hard it is. We know how they played. We know how we need to play in order to have success. And I know the coaches are working on that to focus on our game and our way of hockey to play to be successful. And again, we've shown it up to this point. Are we pleased or satisfied? Not at all. I think there is another level, and I think our players are learning that, as I said, going through the adversity here. So I'm excited for the game tomorrow.
Patrick, there was a thought coming into the last few days that this might be a buyer's market. There was a lot of wingers available, and some went at reasonable prices. A guy like Toffoli certainly comes to mind in this market. How involved were you on some of those potential players, and was the bigger issue cap space or just not wanting to part with assets?
As I said, we were involved in most of the players that were available. I don't know what you're referring to a lot. I don't think there was a lot of quality players available. And I think, as I said, the LTIR, the cap space is important, but when we set our roster in October, that's the number we have to work with. And as I said, the previous deals have been players going out and players are coming in. And that's the world we're operating in. It was definitely a big demand and ask for our younger players. And I didn't feel that in the position where we are, that I wanted to give up the Willander, Lekkimäki, Pettersson, Radis, Sasson, Baines, Podkol, those are the guys of the future here. And we feel strongly about those young players.
I know that Jim said in the last couple of days that top 6 forward was an area of need, and that's 6 weeks after Lindholm has been brought here. How do you address that over the course of the next few weeks before the playoffs and into the playoffs? Is there anything internally you can do, or are you just hoping certain guys hit a different level?
Yeah, I think that's where the coaches are working with the players. It's, you know, as I said, we're going through a slump. We're going through adversity and finding ways to get out of it. And that, I know the coaches are every day working on the individuals to get to the next level. But again, being pleased with watching Baines coming up here for games, watching Podkolzin, how he has improved and worked on the things that we asked him to work on. So those guys will definitely be in the mix here going down the stretch and competing for spots.
Patrick, signing Elias last week, did that change your planning for this week, knowing that now you sort of have a core set for several years, as opposed to not knowing that, you know, what your team was going to look like beyond this year?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, definitely with a projection of our roster moving forward, we know we're going to have some really good players on our team for the next at least 8 years. But that being said, that's where we know that there were a couple of intriguing players available, and we were in those discussions, and for whatever reason they didn't end up here. But we also weren't willing with parting ways with future assets or as I said, the young players that we have that we believe in can come in and help us here over the next couple of years.
And then Phil Kessel, you brought in, you took a look at him, in the end you didn't sign him. What light can you shed on how that process went?
I think Phil is a great person and a well-respected player. What he has done in the league, a three-time cup winner, wanted to come back to play. And as I said, with being an LTIR, roster complications and how we want to play, unfortunately, at this point, it wasn't a fit for us.
Patrick, given all of the moves you've made, and not just the in-season ones with Zadorov and Lindholm, but dating back even to Hronek and to Smith and on, did you feel it was important to hang on to what futures, what draft picks that you have, especially given how marketable prospect capital seemed to be at the deadline?
Yes, definitely. And also, For us, we already parted ways with a lot of draft picks and leading up to this point. And as I said, we're sitting here with 89 points and the players that been on the roster and on the team leading up to this point have done a really good job, and they deserve to finish off here. But again, was it any chance for us to improve with a reasonable cost and not setting the future back, we definitely would have, you know, look at it, but unfortunately it didn't work this time.
I know you can't specifically discuss players on other teams or situations that may have cropped up over the last couple of weeks, but did the experience of bidding on some of the players that went earlier in the process, whether it was earlier this week or the week prior, impact you at all in deciding to be maybe a little bit more conservative based on the prices paid and what you'd sort of learned about how your own system was rated?
I think we, over the last couple of weeks, identified areas on our roster that if anything to improve on. I think we had that the feeling there. I think we played a couple of players higher up in the lineups than what we. What we signed them for, but they've been great. So if there was any ways to strengthen, or as Jim pointed out, top six, absolutely, that would be an area. Saying that, going through the tough stretch here with losing games and not being able to score, hopefully we can find ways, and hopefully we can build guys back up. And as I said, Dakota, when he's coming back, we felt that was a positive injection again to our team.
Patrick, you
sent Vasily down this morning. I think that has to do with making him eligible for the AHL playoffs. What's the plan now for him? He looked comfortable in the three games that he played. Is he going to be back up and in the lineup tomorrow night?
Yes, he's coming back up here. Very pleased. And I think that's the one thing that Höglander learned from us last year, the partnership and the trust factor, that we're doing this to help the players long-term NHL career. And with pods, it's not just the points what we're looking for. It's as Tark is talking about all the time, the wall plays, winning battles, getting the puck deep, the details of the games. And I've been really impressed with Podkolzin since he came up here and played those games on the road trip.
I talked to Rick about 10 days ago, and he had then sort of expressed that there had been a dip in the performance of the fourth line, and he talked about wanting a fourth line with identity. And I know DiGiuseppe scored last night, but that's kind of been the outlier in terms of providing offense. How closely did you guys look at altering the composition of your fourth line? And since you didn't make moves, what do you see as the identity of the group that you've got moving forward down the stretch and into the playoffs?
Yeah, you're right. I think that's something we definitely looked at and has been looking at the whole year. I think you could say that the fourth line was really good. Unfortunately, Höglander graduated out of the fourth line. So I think he was a big part of the fourth line where they were productive and scored. And I think with the injuries of Dakota has moved other players around. I still think having Teddy Bluger as your fourth line center is a luxury. And we all know that the matchups and what the center position does for a winning team is important. And that's where we now, you know, hopefully can find that identity again of being hard to play against, play with speed. And I think that line here over the last stretch of games with Teddy, Sam Lafferty, and DiGiuseppe played pretty good.
I know you guys don't make rash decisions based on short-term results, but did the last three games impact your decision-making at all? Because I know it was a little bit tougher before that. Did this allow you to just be calm and not overreact?
No, I think we again, going back to when this season started, we want to see the progress of the players. And yeah, you're going through adversity and you're trying to find how I can help the coaches provide a better lineup every night. And we're talking to other teams and seeing what's available or not. And I don't think that's really changed their performance this week. I still think that if there was a player available for the right price, we would definitely have jumped in there.
Was it tough, though, to take a measured approach? I think I read that Jim has been involved in 34 trades on deadline day. You guys are an aggressive group by nature, and you don't often get these years where everybody's healthy and people are playing at such a high level. Was it tough to just be measured?
Well, I think you always, and I think that's what I've learned from Jim, you always want to be ahead of things. And part of it is that the discussions that I have with my staff and that I have with Jim and the coaches every day would allow us to quickly get into a trade if it happens. And so was it with Sadorov when we were able to pick him up. It was a quick one there. I think this is a balance of today, today's Vancouver Canucks and next year's and the following year's Vancouver Canucks. And I think this is a process that we started getting in here 2 years ago, and we're not finished. We're not satisfied. We're always trying to get better and improve. Would I like to have another player here today? Sure.
You talked about with your salary cap situation needing to make kind of player for player trades previously in the season. Did that aspect of the trade deadline increase the prices for you in a way that you weren't comfortable with, perhaps needing to include a contract going back or including a third team to get salary retention?
It definitely made it more complicated by bringing in players with salary. That means that you're going to take out the player with salary. or pay a third party. Yes.
There were a lot of trade rumors that went around leading into the deadline. How do you think that maybe impacted your roster, the players that maybe were named in those rumors? And is that something that you had to consider as you were going into the deadline?
Yeah, I feel bad for those players' names out there. I don't think that's the respect or integrity of the league. And sometimes it's just very unfortunate that it's a guessing game. It's not fair.
Patrick, you chatted a little bit about how teams like loading up, like Vegas and Edmonton, will make this a tougher division to play against. When you see some of those deals that Vegas and Edmonton and Winnipeg have made, what goes through your mind as a GM in the same division?
Well, it doesn't get it easier, that's for sure. But it also shows that you need to build up your kind of assets pools and you know, picks or draft picks. And I think that's where we have started to do here and feeling more confident what we have in Abbotsford or unsigned players. And it also shows what the other teams around the league feels about our younger players. I mean, yeah, I could have parted ways with several younger players to get more established players in here if there was any salary cap restrictions, but we're excited about the young players that are getting closer to filling spots on the roster here moving forward.
Now that the deadline's passed, how are you feeling about this team as you gear up for playoffs?
Well, we're not there. We were gearing up for a big week here, gearing up for a big test against Winnipeg. Hopefully, we learned something from last game when we played them. I know the players are having a day off today and a well-deserved one after a tough week here. But I know the coaches are in here working hard, and I know that they're going to have the team prepared for playing tomorrow, and that's their focus.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the day.
That is Patrick Alvin speaking to the media, addressing the lack of moves from the Vancouver Canucks today. We'll take a quick break here. Bick and Randeep are going to have the People Show for the next couple of hours. Open phone boards at some point?
Sure.
I want to speak for you?
Yeah, you know what? Absolutely. It's
all right.
People Show. Yeah.
So open phone boards at some point. I'll just say for my part, the highlight quote, the pull quote from Patrick Alvin that he believes the team is good enough to compete as is. That's the main takeaway for me from Patrick Alvin. Thanks for listening. It's been fun. No fireworks for the Canucks, but still a blast on trade deadline day. Lots more coverage coming up. Bick and Randeep, then Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah on Canucks Central. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on Sportsnet 650.